Last month was Mardi Gras in New Orleans, and tens of thousands of people showed up to celebrate. 7 months after Hurricane Katrina struck, Mayor Ray Nagin recently presented his plan for the rebuilding of the city and reported that New Orleans is coming back to life. However, the outcomes of this reconstruction remain to be seen. The city's population has shrunk by more than half. Hundreds of thousands of former New Orleans residents, mostly poor people of color, remain scattered around the United States, unable to return to their homes. Community groups are fighting for basic infrastructure like schools and hospitals, and for a reconstruction that will respond to the needs of communities rather than the greed of developers. Jordan Flaherty is editor of Left Turn magazine and an organizer with the New Orleans Network, and he's joined me this morning from his home in New Orleans. Good morning, Jordan.
Good morning, Lorraine. Thank you for having me on and for keeping the focus on this issue.
Oh, pleasure for us. As you witnessed the Mardi Gras celebrations this year, what did you notice about who's been able to return to New Orleans and who has not?
You know, Mardi Gras was bittersweet. A lot of us in the city have a real love for Mardi Gras, not the commercial Mardi Gras that people see on, you know, in the media and on TV, but the community Mardi Gras that happens. Every sort of neighborhood and community and city has its own Mardi Gras and their own cultural traditions that are mostly not seen or participated in by tourists. But this Mardi Gras, there was definitely something sad, a lot of people missing. Now, a lot of people from communities, even if their homes were not ready yet or they didn't have somewhere to live, a lot of people did come back. So actually, there was a lot more people, a lot more former residents, a lot more Black residents of the city in during Mardi Gras than, you know, a week before then or any time after then. But still, it was sad seeing the people missing it. And just on a day-to-day basis, it's very sad to see these neighborhoods still empty. And, you know, in the media, you see the Lower Ninth Ward or maybe East New Orleans that are devastated. But what I think you also don't see is just block after block after block of places that took some damage, but, you know, really not so much. Homes these aren't homes that are demolished, homes that you probably do, that definitely need some work, but that are up and standing and are just empty, just block after block of empty houses that could be livable, that people could be coming back, and they're really, I feel, being prevented from coming back.
The federal government has promised hundreds of billions of dollars in relief funds for areas affected by Hurricane Katrina. You've written about what you call the disaster industrial complex that sprung up as a result. What do you mean by that, Jordan?
Well, they have pledged hundreds of billions of dollars, but that certainly, you know, has never come. Very small amounts have come, and so much of it has been grabbed up by exactly these disaster profiteers. First of all, just the fact that Red Cross has gotten almost $2 billion, I think, is a real shame. And that's mostly, obviously, individual contributions from people around the country and around the world. And just yesterday, two more Red Cross supervisors were fired. The head of Red Cross nationally had to resign. And it's all because they very clearly did a terrible, terrible job, and that money overall did not reach people of the city. But also we're seeing the same folks that have profited off of Iraq and off of other situations around the world where people have needed relief or reconstruction or recovery. So we're seeing Halliburton, Kellogg Brown and Root made billions of dollars, CMH2 Hill, the Shaw Group, Blackwater, who are security contractors. They're certainly very active in Iraq. All these folks have made tons of money. We still have these Blackwater guards in the city. I think they're making $350 a day per diem plus extra money on top of that. So all of these corporations are making massive amounts of money. Meanwhile, renters and homeowners are getting the short end of the stick, getting nothing or almost nothing, having to fight with insurance companies for money that's deserved for them, having to fight every step of the way for any assistance, any relief at all.
Who are the major players in Bring New Orleans Back, which is the city's official reconstruction committee?
It's mostly developers. They were appointed by Mayor Ray Nagin, who was elected with 70% of the white vote and a minority of the Black vote of the city. He was definitely, from the very beginning, supported by developers, by real estate interests. And those are very much who's on the commission. Joe Cannizzaro and Press Kabakoff are two of the main members of the commission who are notorious developers in the city, who have, for a long time, had their plans to demolish public housing and build up condos, what they call mixed-income areas. Press Kabakoff is a developer who destroyed the St. Thomas housing projects about 5-10 years ago and built up in its place condos for wealthy people and then a Walmart nearby. So the developers have definitely had control, and you know, almost no one with any sort of community support or community representation. And I think the report's recommendation shows that there's a certain amount for homeowners, whether black or white, although I would argue more for white homeowners, but almost nothing for renters, certainly nothing for people in public housing. And those are the people that are missing more than anything, and the people that I think are having the hardest obstacle to come back.
Now, I understand that the reconstruction plan says pretty much that people can build anywhere, but that's at their own risk. What's the story there?
That's exactly right. So people will get some sort of support in the sense that, if they're doing rebuilding, they can get their electricity and gas turned on, which is something, although if you go through the city again, traffic lights are off all throughout the city, even in the mostly undamaged uptown area. Garbage pickup is still not to normal. In most of the city, I live in a very fairly privileged area, I would say, in the scheme of things. The 7th Ward, where about a block or two from me, there was some pretty bad flooding, but where I am is pretty okay. But we still have no garbage pickup. We still don't have regular mail service. And so, you know, that's a situation all throughout the city. But the plan does allow for people to at least get some of that, but still it doesn't really make long-term guarantees, and especially saying to some of the folks in New Orleans East and the lower 9th Ward, go ahead and rebuild, but, you know, we think that the area is going to flood again, and, you know, we can't guarantee that you're going to put all this work in, and then 6 months from now or a year from now, it's not going to be demolished anyway. And that's basically certainly keeping people in vast stretches of this area from making the time commitment, the emotional commitment, the financial commitment to rebuilding, knowing that ultimately the city does not really have their back.
Does the reconstruction plan include any provisions for people who lived in public housing projects?
If it does, I haven't seen any. The people in public housing have really gotten the short end of the stick. The city council president, along with the head of HANA, which is the Housing Authority of New Orleans, who oversees public housing, made this statement. First, the city council president said, we don't want any soap opera watchers coming back. And the head of the Housing Authority continued with a statement to say that they would have these tests for people to come back, that they had to show a job history and job training. And basically, it's a further criminalization of the people that lived in public housing. We have thousands of these units that, from the very beginning, have been ready for people to move back in. These are three-story units, so at the worst, there was some damage on the first floor, but no damage at all on the second or third floor. Very sturdy units, most of them in fairly good locations in town. So locations that didn't sustain much flooding, locations that are pretty centrally located. And people have been just prevented from coming back, thousands and thousands of units that are just sealed off to people, and people are not able to return home. These people could have returned in September, certainly in October, they could have been able to come back. And now, 7 months later, they're still empty, and just a trickle of people are being allowed back.
What's the motivation for putting up these barriers for people to come back, and for the class's statement that you mentioned from the city councilor?
It's a criminalization. Even, you know, I would say from a lot of wealthier black folks in the city, it's this idea that the people in public housing, those are the drug dealers, those are the lazy people, those are the people that are, you know, what's wrong with the city, and they don't want them back. It's really this criminalization of the poor people. And we're seeing that on so many levels. I mean, if you look at all these people that were in Orleans Parish Prison when the flooding began, 7,500 people, and at least 3,000 of them are still in the prison. 6 months after the hurricane, they have not seen a lawyer. They have not had a trial. They have not been convicted of any crime. Thousands and thousands of people, including many who had been in there for 6 months before the hurricane and had not been convicted of a crime. This is a system that was broken pre-Katrina. Thousands of people are in these jails, not convicted of any crime, not allowed to see, not having any lawyer appointed to them, not having any lawyer. There was 42 public defenders for indigent defenders in the system pre-Katrina. Now there's about six. And those six that there are allowed to take other cases, a full-time load of other cases. So they represent almost no people. A group called Safe Streets, Strong Communities talked to 1,000 prisoners, and they found of those 1,000, the average amount of days they'd been in was 385 days. So on an average, they'd been in for 6 months pre-Katrina. One of them, the longest, had been in over 1,200 days. None of these people had been convicted of any crime. None of them, with four exceptions, had a lawyer. None of them had a lawyer appointed for them. So, I mean, it's Guantanamo in the Mississippi.
When we look at the reconstruction process, I know that many community groups have been fighting to have a say in that process. What success do you think they're having?
Well, you know, springing up in all these neighborhoods are, first of all, community groups, basically neighborhood councils. So every neighborhood has community groups, which are, you know, very much dominated by homeowners. So again, renters in these groups don't have much of a voice. But these community groups have, I think, had some success in organizing within their communities, even in the hardest hit areas, in the lower Ninth Ward, in New Orleans East. In these areas, these community groups have been organizing. And then in terms of for renters and you know, all of the people in the city, there are other community groups like the People's Hurricane Relief Fund and Safe Streets Strong Communities and these other coalitions and community groups that are organizing for justice and reconstruction. And they've been doing a lot of excellent work, and they've gotten a lot of support from people around the country and around the world. We've had thousands of volunteers here in the city, almost 1,000 folks just from historically black colleges working with the People's Hurricane Relief Fund, doing community organizing, doing rebuilding, doing house gutting. Going around in these communities, other folks have worked with the Common Ground Relief Collective. Other folks have worked with religious groups, and people have been on the ground working. And I really think that we're going to see, in 5 years, in 10 years, you know, the new leadership of social justice and progressive movements, the folks doing the most exciting organizing and activism, will have really gotten their experience in organizing here in New Orleans. They'll have experiences that shape them, not just in terms of the organizing that's happening here, but also in terms of what you can see in racism on hyperdrive, everything being attacked, from housing to the healthcare system to the education system to the criminal justice system. All of these things are such stark relief here in the city that it's really shaped people by being here.
Well, I really appreciate your speaking with me this morning, Jordan, and we'll try and keep in touch.
Thank you very much. I encourage people to check out leftturn.org for more information on this, to contact those groups like People's Hurricane Relief Fund and Common Ground, and just encourage people to help keep this issue alive, because it affects all of us.
Thanks. I've been speaking with Jordan Flaherty, who has joined us from his home in New Orleans, and Jordan is an editor of Left Turn magazine and an organizer with New Orleans Network. And links to both the websites can be found at cooperadio.org/redeye.